story will arise in the news or through word of mouth of a criminal case that is so polarizing that it becomes a hot topic for discussion, debate, and heated discourse. These cases are often highly reported on in the press and occasionally go unsolved due to the nature of the evidence or lack thereof. When they emerge, many will have an opinion, and some will even feel passionate about a particular outcome they feel is valid and warranted. In today's climate of true crime television shows, movies of the week, podcasts and various other formats dedicated to analysing every aspect of unsolved murder cases, it's common for once forgotten about cases to be resurrected and reanalyzed. And whilst interesting and deeply mysterious for the audience, it's important to remember the victims in these cases and not to trample on the graves of the innocent. And thus this week we discuss the strange death of Jean-Benet Ramsey. An enduring mystery, a 22-year-old cold case, and a crime that captivated the United States during the late 1990s, the case of Jean-Benet Ramsey remains to this day baffling and deeply perplexing. Many feel the guilty party or parties are obvious. They see it as glaringly obvious who perpetrated the crime. But sometimes things are not all that they seem. Whilst there is a wealth of circumstantial evidence in this case, there are also hard evidence and many contradictory twists and turns where the forensics take us. As always, I'm going to deal in the facts. It's you who I will trust to make the judgment on who you personally feel is guilty of this crime. To start us off, I'm going to go into a little bit of background information on who Jean-Benet and her family were. I think it helps to set the scene a little bit if we are to be able to try and get our heads around what will follow afterwards. Jean-Benet Ramsey was born in 1990 in Atlanta, Georgia, the younger of two children of Patsy and John Ramsey. Jean-Benet had one older brother named Burke, who was 3 years her senior. The family had moved from Atlanta to Boulder in Colorado in 1991 so that they could be closer to John's place of work. John Ramsey was president and chief executive officer of a company started in 1989 called Access Graphics. Around the same time the family moved to Boulder, the company had merged with two others and become a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin. The company created specialized computer systems for various industries, and in 1996 the company grossed over $1 billion, resulting in John Ramsey being awarded Entrepreneur of the Year by Boulder City Chamber of Commerce. A very big and lavish dinner was held on December the 22nd, 1996 to celebrate, with much local media coverage. Patsy Ramsey married John in November 1980 and moved with him to Atlanta, Georgia from her hometown of Gilbert in West Virginia. She had previously been crowned Miss West Virginia on the American Beauty Pageant circuit in 1977. Patsy kept involved in the beauty pageant circuit throughout the years before she began entering her own daughter Jean-Benet into the competitions herself from a young age. By the age of six, Jean-Benet had amassed over 12 trophies from his success on the beauty pageant circuit. Patsy was well known as a society lady. She threw lavish parties and was always the attentive host. By all intents and purposes, the Ramsey were wealthy, well-respected members of the community and had the image of the perfect family. John was a powerful CEO, Patsy was the traditional Southern hostess, and her children were well-mannered, well-raised, and well-dressed. They portrayed a lifestyle of perfection in every possible way. At 5:30 a.m. on December the 26th, 1996, Patsy Ramsey awoke early. She was about to make preparations for the family to take their private plane to their second home in Michigan later that morning. As Patsy descended the stairs to the ground floor of her four-story house, she came across two pieces of notepad paper that had been laid carefully out. According to her own account of events, she read the first four lines of the note before letting out a scream and calling for her husband, John. The note read, "Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully. We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We respect your business, but not the country that it serves. At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She is safe and unharmed, and if you want to see her in 1997, you must follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be in $100 bills, and the remaining $18,000 in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you will put the money in a brown paper bag. I will call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be well rested. If we monitor you getting the money early, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence an earlier pickup of your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you not to provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but be warned that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good southern common sense of yours. It's up to you now, John. Victory. SBTC. Who had John Benet? Why had they taken her? And where had they taken her? Patsy, in a fluster, upset, and with a thousand thoughts running through her head, called the Boulder City Police Department at 5:52 a.m., some 7 minutes after reading the ransom letter. This is her telephone call.
911 emergency.
Hello, we need police.
What's going on?
515th Street.
What's going on there, ma'am?
We have a kidnapping. Hi, please.
Explain to me what's going on, okay?
There, we have there's a note left and our daughter's gone.
A note was left and your daughter is gone? How old is your daughter?
6 years old. She's gone. 6 years old.
How long ago was this?
I don't know. I just found the note. And my daughter's
kidnapped. Does it say who took her?
What?
Does it say who's in there?
I don't know. There's a ransom note here.
It's a ransom note?
It says SBTC. Victory. Please.
Okay, what's your name? Are you
Kathy Ramsey? I'm the mother. Oh, my God. Please.
I'm sending an officer over, okay?
Please.
Do you know how long she's been gone?
No, I don't. Please, we just got out. Is she right here? Oh, my God, please.
Okay,
please, well, there's somebody.
I am, honey.
Please.
Take a deep breath.
Please,
away, okay?
hurry.
Kathy?
Police descended on the Ramseys' home right away, but not before Patsy had called a number of neighbors and friends and invited them over to the house too. As you can imagine, this did great harm in compromising the crime scene forensically. However, this seemed to be of little concern to the police when they arrived, who failed to seal the house or any part of it right away. Understandably, the Ramseys were distraught and beyond comfort. Their behavior was erratic and strange initially, and many have cited some of their behavior as indications of guilt on the parents' part. However, I think it's key to point out that there is no set standard for how an individual should act in a crisis, more so a situation as unique as this one. The police, taking the ransom note by its word, did not search the rest of the house or neighborhood, assuming the perpetrators and Jean Benet were long gone. By 7:30 a.m., John Ramsey had withdrawn the full ransom amount of $118,000. What's interesting here is that this is the exact same amount that John was paid as a bonus a few weeks prior. At 8 a.m, the police brought a victim advocacy group into the home to support the Ramseys. The group very thoroughly cleaned the kitchen while there as a help to Patsy, further impacting any forensic evidence that might be present. Throughout all the bustle and activity in the house, Patsy stated she went into the room of her son Burke to check on him, and he chose to remain in bed that morning. By 10 a.m, the police decided to seal off Jean Benet's room, and only her room. As it was the Christmas period, a lot of senior and more experienced staff were on holiday, so a number of rookie police officers oversaw the efforts that day. As 10 a.m. passed, no one, the police, the Ramseys, or anyone else in the house mentioned that the kidnappers had said they would call between 8 and 10 a.m. It wasn't mentioned then, or at any time ever again. By this point, the FBI had been and gone also. They took a few pictures, but overall seemed disinterested and left things to local police officers. Which was strange given that John Ramsey was a company president with links to the defense and arms industry, and threats of a kidnapping by a small foreign faction had been made, which was a federal and national security interest. By 1 p.m., things had died down, A lot of friends and neighbours had left, and there was only one police officer remaining on site. Officer Linda Arndt, a relatively new police officer. As John was pacing, Officer Arndt told him and a friend of his who remained at the house, Fleet White, to search the house for clues and evidence, a further blow to any forensic investigation. John started his search in the basement. Upon entering the wine cellar, he came across an open window and the body of his daughter, Jean Benet. He yelled, "Oh my God, my baby!" The child was laying face down with black tape over her mouth and cord around her neck that was attached to wooden handles at each end, forming a garrote. Her hands were bound above her head and she was covered by a light blanket. John tore off the tape from her mouth and undid her hand bindings. He picked up her body and rushed upstairs, laying it on the floor of the hall. Patsy Ramsey, in a hysterical display of tears and screams, picked up her daughter's body and held it close to hers. She then moved the body again into the living room and laid on top of it with her face next to her daughter's. Officer Arndt later said about this moment that John Ramsey gave her a look that made her reach for and hold her gun until backup had arrived. She felt there was a look in his eyes that suggests he knew more than he was letting on. By 2 p.m, police had returned and now sealed the Ramsey's house off as a crime scene. What had happened to innocent young Jean Benet? The events were all so bizarre. Let's take a deeper look at some of the evidence and events surrounding this case. The night before, on Christmas Day, the Ramseys attended a party at a neighbour's house. They returned home at around 10 p.m. where Jean Benet was already asleep. The Ramseys put her in bed, following which John, Patsy and Burke also retired for the evening and went to bed. At around 2 a.m, a neighbour, Melanie Stanton, told police that she heard a young girl scream. The scream was stopped abruptly. However, she didn't raise her concerns at the time. Tests conducted by Boulder City Police Department would later prove that a child's scream could be heard across the street where Melanie Stanton was located, but not on the top floor of the Ramseys' house where John, Patsy and Burke were asleep. The autopsy revealed that Jean Benet had been killed by both strangulation and a skull fracture. The official cause of death was asphyxia by strangulation associated with craniocerebral trauma. There was no evidence of conventional rape, although sexual assault was probable. There was no semen found, but there was evidence of a vaginal injury and possible historical abuse. It also appeared her vaginal area had been wiped with a cloth. Her death was ultimately ruled a homicide. A garrote that was made from a length of nylon cord and the broken handle of a paintbrush was tied around Jean Benet's neck and had been used in her strangulation. The bristle end of the paintbrush was found in a tub of Patsy's art supplies, although the bottom third of it was never found despite extensive searching of the house by the police. The autopsy also revealed a pineapple in Jean Benet's stomach. It had been consumed a few hours prior to her death. A bowl of pineapple was found on the kitchen table with a spoon in it. Both John and Patsy said they don't remember putting this bowl on the table. Police reported they found Burke Ramsey's fingerprints on the bowl. The Ramseys have always maintained that Burke slept through the entire episode until he was awakened several hours after the police arrived. Interestingly, there are elements of the autopsy that are redacted, and a large part of the case evidence is sealed, which is also a very rare thing to happen. After the house was completely searched by the police, there was no cord or object found that was a match and could have been used as the murder weapon, which would also beg the question, why hide a murder weapon but not the corpse? Initially, the Boulder Police Department suspected the Ramsey family of the crime. The Ramseys didn't help themselves image-wise at the time either by immediately lawyering up, hiring a team of private investigators, forensic profilers, and also a PR team. However, after questioning the Ramseys and after a very thorough investigation, the district attorney, Mary Lacey, issued a formal apology letter to John Ramsey on July the 9th, 2008, and she stated publicly that no one in the Ramsey family is a suspect in Jean Benet's murder. Statistically, 92% of all child murders that occur within the family home, the killer turns out to be a family member, but nearly 100% of the time there is a history of abuse to go with it. In this case, there is no evidence of abuse in the family. The district attorney, shortly after the Boulder police began their investigation, hired her own investigator with experience of working on hundreds of murder cases. The investigator concluded fairly easily that the Ramseys could not have committed the crime. Further, he speculated that an intruder broke in via the basement window while the family were at the Christmas party and brought the cord, duct tape, and blunt object that was used as the murder weapon with him. Press initially reported that there was no footprints in the snow outside the basement window, making an intruder unlikely. However, crime scene photographs show the path to the house was completely clear. An intruder could have easily reached the basement window from the path without leaving a trace outside. Also, the basement was already broken and open, as John Ramsey had forgotten his keys several weeks prior and had to break into the house himself. At the point of the murder, the Ramseys hadn't had this repaired. The ransom note. Now, this is considered one of the most bizarre elements of the case. The average length of ransom notes are around 10 words long, but this one was 374 words in length, the longest ransom note recorded in US history. It was written on a yellow legal pad with a black Sharpie pen. Both of these items were already in the house, so the intruder had written the ransom note while inside the house. A handwriting analysis was done on the note and it was found to be an 85% match to Patsy Ramsey, but ruled out John Ramsey. The note was perceived by the police to be unrealistic and theatrical, and officers noted the many elements that appeared to be taken from movies. At the end of the note it says, "Use that good Southern common sense, John." But John wasn't Southern, he was from Nebraska, something Patsy Ramsey would definitely have known if she wrote the letter. The tone of the ransom note was also oddly formal in parts, and used a particularly educated phrase, which was, "and hence." The Ramseys used that same phrase in the Christmas card message that year, which read, "Had there not been the birth of Christ, there'd be no hope of eternal life, and hence, no hope of ever being with our loved ones again." "And hence" was also a phrase that was used by both John and Patsy Ramsey in several interviews after the murder, so it was most certainly in the vocabulary. Let's not forget the oddly specific ransom amount of $118,000 as well. This was the same amount that John Ramsey had been paid that Christmas as a bonus for his company achieving $1 billion in sales that year. Something that perhaps only family members, friends, and some colleagues might know. Something to think about here also is why an intruder would write the ransom note inside the house. Well, under Colorado law, if an intruder gets caught breaking in with a ransom note and he gets searched, he would be arrested for attempted kidnapping. However, if he breaks in without the note and gets caught, he would be charged with breaking and entering. The difference in sentencing would be a weekend in jail for breaking and entering compared to several years for kidnapping, as it's a federal offense. Did the intruder know this too, perhaps? DNA from under the fingernails and on the underwear from JonBenet's body did not match anyone in the family, nor did it return a match on the FBI's nationwide DNA database, which would indicate the guilty party as a person with no previous criminal history. About 2 months prior to her murder, JonBenet complained to her mother about her private parts hurting, and men in long black robes putting things into her privates. Court documents released in 2014 revealed that in 1999, a grand jury voted to indict John and Patsy Ramsey for child abuse resulting in the death of their daughter and being an accessory to a crime. The document was not signed off by the district attorney, however. So the grand jury had seen enough evidence to say they were part of the crime but not the murderers. The evidence that the grand jury saw has never been released, and there are multiple redactions in the search warrants and police documents relating to the case. In a 2000 interview with Michael Caine, the gentleman that led the grand jury probe, he said, "There remain dozens of secrets in this case, and a lot of what the public think is fact in this case is simply not fact at all." So what do you think happened? The Ramseys have all been legally exonerated, and evidence proves they did not kill their daughter. So who did? And why did JonBenet die? I would love to hear your theories and thoughts. Message us via the website deadsoulsocialclub.com and follow us on Instagram at dead_souls_podcast. You can get extra rewards and extras by heading on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/deadsouls. Show us some support and join the Dead Soul Social Club. So take care of yourselves, everyone, and sleep tight. And remember, stand firm as you enter the darkest night.